Akron, Ohio. This is episode 56.
I thought it was 96.
95 of On the Tropes.
96.
Yep. For those who listen to episode 94, this is indeed a drunk episode. On this week's episode, we are talking about Wes Anderson. Perhaps you've heard of him. He's been nominated for an Oscar. Many of them, actually.
2 to 3.
2.5, actually. 2.4. For those who are mathematicians.
Are those considered OSCI at that point?
OSCI. I'm your host, Nick, and we are...
Jake.
And Kyle.
Instead of talking about the shit that you guys have been watching, do you guys want to do some feedback?
Yes.
Yeah.
We do have some feedback on our...
Because I haven't really watched anything since... Like the last an hour episode. Ago.
Yep. This is from Lawrence Hamblin. He's talking about his top five mooks, which, if you don't remember, are like henchmen. His number five was The Orcs in Fellowship of the Ring.
That's a good crony.
I know Jake's a fan of that. The Monarch's henchmen in The Venture Bros. The Aesir Corporation security towards the end of Max Payne. Number two is Bertrand's Militia in Infamous 2. And number one is Bandits in Borderlands.
It's a lot of video game guys.
Yeah. Wait, who's the poop us?
Lawrence.
That was Lawrence.
Lawrence
Trambly.
Lawrence is my man.
Larry, you're doing. Did you hear they're making a Borderlands movie?
For sure.
This sounds like the setup.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, Borderlands.
I don't really know what they would be making it about because that storyline was basically just walking through and killing shit.
He said Borderlands 2, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. The Borderlands series is incredible.
Video game, but not an incredible story.
Maybe not an incredible story, but the characters. Did you play Borderlands 2?
I played Borderlands 1.
Okay, Borderlands 1 is fine. Borderlands 2 introduces Handsome Jack, he's an incredible villain. But yeah, the bandits that he's talking about are really interesting and really just over the top. They're kind of like Mad Max characters.
Yeah.
They're
crazy.
Yeah, they're all... That commercial with the "Have a lovely day," like that is a freaking bandit from Borderlands. So yeah,
Larry, Lawrence, whatever you go by. Thanks for the feedback, dude.
Good on you. He goes by Lawrence by email. I don't know what in his day to day life. We haven't had the pleasure.
LT LH. Lawrence Tramlin.
No, it's with an H.
What was his last name?
Hamburger. this email is from Z Doctor.
D Stones.
Which is what his email address is listed as. He says, talking about we did a Mel Brooks episode. He said, "One funny moment I can't recall you mentioning in Young Frankenstein is when Frankenstein locks himself in a room with a monster with instructions to his assistants not to open the door no matter what, only to backpedal the instant the door is closed." Yeah, it's a hilarious movie.
Funny thing about Mel Brooks.
Everything.
I met his son.
I met his son, too. We didn't talk about it that much on the show. We did meet his son.
We did. I have a signed copy of the Zombie Survival Guide from him, and Max Brooks saying that because he was asking questions of the crowd, and we talked to him about it, about zombie survival, you know, theories, and he would survive with us because he thought we had good knowledge of it. What? I loved that book. I need to go back and reread it right now.
Yeah, he signed my copy of World War Z.
Oh God, that movie was horrible.
See the movie, but the book
one
is
of the worst.
The book was so good.
The book is excellent.
Why do I feel like Max Brooks is nothing like Mel Brooks?
He's not.
He's
his own
like
person.
Mel Brooks. They're the same person. Mel Brooks actually cloned himself. I don't know if you guys know.
Perhaps.
Yep. Z Doctor also writes in a lot. He says he doesn't have much to say about Road Trip or Gainax ending episodes, other than apparently his name is pronounced Stephen, like Stephen King, with the PH, despite it.
Sounded like Stephen.
Stephen.
Yeah.
Steph Curry with the shot. Boy.
If I recall correctly.
Steph Curry now.
That was Drake.
We weren't positive on it, and we speculated.
What? On what?
He does talk about a Pete and Pete episode, though. Little Pete and his friends are left in the school overnight after the principal forgets.
Yep.
They're in his office and goes home. Principal.
Constable.
Yep. After some wacky hijinks, the episode ends on the principal coming to school to find them sitting on the exact same place he left them the previous day, and Pete convincing him,
dude,
they hadn't moved at
my
all.
My name is...
That was a great show.
It was his name Archie?
Arnie.
My name is Arnie, the strongest man in the world.
Yeah. And do you remember? Do you guys remember?
What was the name of the band that wrote the theme song?
Solaris.
There you go.
No, Polaris.
Polaris.
Polaris. Solaris is the name of a Russian movie.
Bow, bow, bow. It's kind of strange.
What a
great show.
Do you guys remember who played the ice cream salesman when they were on the boardwalk?
Ooh.
It was Michael Stipe from R.E.M.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember who played Cowboy Curtis in Pee-wee's Playhouse?
Larry Fishburne.
Ah, classic Larry.
Larry. Yeah.
I was like, you're totally wrong. Wait, he's right.
Nope. Yep. He used to go by Larry back when he was a...
young whippersnapper.
A cowboy.
Any other feedback?
Yeah. Nope. That was it. Actually, no, we do have more. Should I get into it? Let me pull it up because I totally just closed out forgetting that we had more. Oh, this one.
Since Nick is so rude, I'm just going to be like, thank you guys for the feedback.
Teaser for a future episode. We are going to cover the trope deconstruction as this was suggested to us by...
like Godzilla deconstruction?
No, just like regular deconstruction. Oh. This was suggested to us by Twitter follower Remy Falding, who has, I think, my favorite Twitter username of all time, Rem Springer.
Oh, nice. I wonder if he's Amish.
Rem Springer? He might be. But yeah, we'll get to deconstructing soonly. But first, on this week's episode, we are talking about Wes Anderson. Perhaps you've heard of him. He's written and directed a few movies. Kyle, why are we talking about Wes Anderson?
Because he's incredible.
More specifically, are there any party-based things that are coming out, like,
baby,
probably 2 days after we release this episode?
This episode?
Yeah, this episode.
Really? I don't know what the release episode
actually,
schedule.
Actually, no.
Probably a
couple
days. By
the time we release
days,
this episode,
the party
will
have happened.
But
so
we got to try and sync those up and release some photos from the party.
Basically, we're having an appetizer cook-off at my Shindig house, and it's Wes Anderson themed. So anyone can dress up as their favorite Wes Anderson character. So it's awesome. And his movies
definitely
allow that to happen.
Yep.
I love that he's an artist in the sense that, you know, you look at a Caravaggio painting and it looks like a Caravaggio. You look at a Titian, it looks like a Titian. You watch a Wes Anderson movie, it looks like a Wes Anderson movie.
I don't know who those first two ones are, but yeah, you see a Wes Anderson movie and you go...
I was an art history major, so... If you don't know Caravaggio and Titian, check them out. Really great Renaissance artists.
I really like Van Gogh. Do you dislike Van Gogh?
I just think he's not as... I mean, he's good, but... He was important for the history of art, but I don't think he was as
of all the artists whatever in the world, he's
not my
favorite.
Taste comes into this.
Vandermeer? Is that a person?
I mean, Vermeer.
Vermeer.
No, not Vermeer. I know who Vermeer is. There was a movie based off of him.
Van Eyck?
No, there's a guy
Jan named Vermeer?
Yeah, maybe. Anywho.
That was a great movie, by the way. Total segue. It was called
Tim's Vermeer.
Didn't see it. Saw lots of trailers.
Incredible.
It's
the most interesting movie about someone painting something.
No, it's the most interesting thing about someone solving a problem, in my opinion.
Anyway.
Anyways.
I think Ocean's 11 is a great movie about somebody solving a problem.
I liked Ocean's 13 better. Say what?
Are you serious?
Not even close.
All right,
Ocean's
good.
12 was way better. And Ocean's 11 was the best.
Ocean's 12 is... Wait, which one was which?
The third one was Al Pacino. The second one... I liked this...
Hoo-ah!
Hoo-ah!
Stealing from my casino. Hoo-ah!
12 was the acrobat gymnast thief. And
ooh,
11
yeah,
was Tony Bennett.
No, I know which one 11... I know which one 11
That was just a huge bitch please my way.
Come on, girl.
I really liked those movies. Great, high rewatch value.
I love the first one.
But I actually didn't...
Choice.
I didn't start liking Wes Anderson movies till his recent stuff. Fantastic Mr. Fox, Moonrise Kingdom, and The Grand Budapest Hotel.
That's unfortunate, because I feel like his early stuff...
I know. Doing the research for this movie, looking up like best scenes, Wes Anderson, they're all Rushmore, Bottle Rocket...
Royal Tenenbaums.
Royal Tenenbaums and stuff.
Life Aquatic with
and
Steve
Zissou. You don't see anything from his newer stuff. And I'm like, I know his more recent movies are way more stylized. They're like the look of them is way more focused, and you can tell that it's way more thought out. But I think that's what's drawn me in more. And it's also just because I think movies like Rushmore, they're not easily accessible.
It's a hard movie to watch.
Well, they're all like even to find too.
Oh yeah,
like, it's and
so, it was playing on the Delta flight from Dublin to Atlanta.
How is that?
that and
did you have a choice of like
that and Teenage Mutant Ninja
How awesome
Ninja
would it
Turtles?
Be if you just had a choice of like two movies and that was one of them?
No, that and Fantastic Mr. Fox were both available on the flight.
See, I haven't seen either of those. I mean, I saw Rushmore, but I haven't
Rushmore. I just watched Fantastic Mr. Fox for the first time whilst in Ireland on a train.
Whilst. I haven't seen that one. Haven't seen...
Me and Lisa had a discussion earlier today about whilst and whilst.
Whilst.
I say whilst, and she says whilst.
It's whilst. I think it's whilst.
It's whilst.
Anyway, please bring this up when she comes back, but...
I have not seen Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, Grand Budapest
Darjeeling
Hotel
Limited.
Fantastic.
I heard it was overrated. Rated.
Darjeeling. Oh, Grand Budapest was overrated?
Yeah.
From who?
Some fellow Wes Anderson fans.
They're wrong. It's
Wes Anderson fans?
That's a terrific movie.
People in my office really...
What I really like about Grand Budapest Hotel is that he uses different framing styles or different aspect ratios for... It's basically a story within a story within a story. And he uses different aspect ratios for each. So I think you would actually very much enjoy that. I
appreciate that.
To throw a pun out there, aspect.
Hey! 2 points.
Yeah. 3 points. Slam dunk.
2 points, Hufflepuff. Because you're in Hufflepuff.
3 points. Please, Gryffindor.
Bro, you're in Hufflepuff.
I'm sure in Ravenclaw.
You're definitely Slytherin.
I'm
what?
Slytherin.
No, you're Slytherin.
Oh, why would I be Slytherin?
Because you're an asshole. Anyway.
I'm Slytherin.
That was probably the meanest thing anyone's ever said to me.
You're Slytherin because you're an asshole.
Anyway. I'm sorry.
Oh, this got fucking dark. But yeah, Grand Budapest Hotel has varying aspect ratios. Jake is Dark Knight
performing the magic trick.
Performing the magic from Dark Knight with a screwdriver on his
own
face.
Are you going to throw my face onto that?
No. I was throwing my face onto it because you made me feel so poorly.
I think what I like about... Grand Budapest Hotel a lot is how you can tell that he's kind of like learning as he's making movies, and he'll take aspects from his older movies. I feel like the bobsled scene that was like straight from Fantastic Mr. Fox, but, like this really over the top sort of animated
that will come
also
later
though,
in the show.
But also though, yeah. I feel like he's so heavily inspired by graphic design, because if you look at a lot of like European and like Swiss posters from the 60s, where graphic design started to really get its find its legs. Yeah, you look at those posters and then you see the work that he's doing, and it's like complete inspiration by those, and it's just like,
yeah.
I'll show you guys some. Maybe I don't know if you guys have a show notes, but we can put some stuff in the show notes.
We don't.
Okay,
really.
Google Swiss.
We could, but I don't because I'm
Google
so
like
lazy.
Swiss winter sports posters from the 60s, yeah. And you'll find really cool stuff. But the other thing that's cool with graphic design is there is a woman named Jessica Hish who did the lettering for. She's a famous graphic designer. She did the lettering for Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh.
I drank a beer once with her, and she gave me a really snarky look.
Were you drinking it in like a non-cool way?
I showed up to Chicago after a six-hour drive at 11 o'clock at night, went to the bar, ordered two tall boys of Busch.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
And
I'm giving you a snarky look right now.
I was double-fisting because I was super broken in college and went to Chicago with $40 for a weekend, basically. Yeah. And she was hand-lettering expensive things at that point.
Yeah.
She's really talented. Jessica Hish. show notes.
I do. I think of the Wes Anderson movies, I think Moonrise Kingdom is actually my favorite. That's the one that has the most emotional resonance with me.
I would emotionally, yes.
Which
yes.
is awesome to say because
it's about a 14-year-old girl.
Kids. I was gonna say, it's about kids,
but it's you feel for those kids. I mean,
Justin texted me after he saw that movie. He said he's in love with a 14-year-old girl.
Creepy, but
I think what were we talking about last episode about innocence?
Yeah,
it does have wonderful innocence,
and that's just
yeah.
it, that's. Well, I think a lot of adults our age, yeah. the millennials, yearn for that again.
And yeah. going along with the amateur actors, I mean, there are big name actors, but they aren't the leads.
Yeah,
they are like the leads are these no name kids.
Yeah. Yeah, Bruce Willis takes a back seat to, I don't know what their names are. Sam and Susie.
Yeah, yeah, and he takes a back seat even to her parents.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's awesome.
Bill Murray is.
And what's her name, though? Florence...
Frances McDermott. Oscar winner, Frances McDermott.
Sorry,
yeah.
France.
Yeah, and I've done a lot of film shoots in film school, and I've constantly heard how working with kids is, like, the worst thing ever. Because, I mean, with schedules, it's tough, but I mean, even just like acting and trying to get them to
it's hard.
To do anything, and like no name people, and it's incredible the performance they got out of them. I'm surprised that
the kids in that movie are so good.
I've done an interview with a 9-year-old kid talking about his own life, and it was like he did great, but it was a process. I couldn't imagine what it would be like to pull kids in and to try and create, you know.
For many
an Oscar
weeks at a
caliber,
time, yeah.
And you know what I mean. That's an Oscar caliber movie, in my opinion. And it's just like
that was one of my favorite movies of that year. Yeah.
Should we trope it? Any other comments before we get into the nitty gritty?
I mean, I have like a million comments, but they can come whilst we get into the nitty gritty.
Please bring that up to Lisa because. I was like,
I'm pretty sure it's whilst.
I thought it was whilst, but then when she brought it up.
I mean,
up,
would you call him Willy Coyote? No, you call him Wiley Coyote.
Well, Hold on. Pronunciation book. This is. Have you seen the YouTube channel of this?
Is it
like signing kind of Dodie Shody?
Yeah. Or yes. Ganchis.
Here you go. If your Wi-Fi works.
Signing kind of Dodie Shody.
What was that?
That's the YouTube pronunciation for Synecdoche.
Whilst. Sounds like whilst.
Whilst.
We lost. Anyway.
But they also pronounce Chipotle like...
Chipotle. Nick, do you want to talk about the... Whilst. Okay, we lost.
I do.
Older Wes Anderson. Rushmore. Are you going to get into that with your scenes and stuff?
I actually don't have any Rushmore on my scenes. I think Rushmore is a great movie, though. I
know nothing about it.
I think it's a little overrated in terms of I don't think it's his best movie.
Agreed.
Is it as artistic as his newer movies?
No.
Is that something that he realized? I think it's much more emotionally raw than a lot of his other movies.
It's one of those things where he uses his style that he uses. But I don't think it's as well served in that movie as it is in things like Moonrise Kingdom.
I mean, the way you got to look at Wes Anderson, though, is as a process, as an artist across all of his. Yeah. Look at Bottle Rocket.
Yeah.
None of his current style or, you know, if you think of the Wes Anderson toolbox of movie making, none of it's there. Rushmore, none of it's there, really. Royal Tenenbaums starts to get there. The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou really starts to get there.
Yeah.
See,
I like... Darjeeling Limit, really, you know what I mean?
I like Rushmore and Royal Tenenbaums. I haven't seen Darjeeling Limited, but I like those more than Life Aquatic.
Life Aquatic is probably my favorite.
I think he's close in those, but I mean, there's just something about Moonrise in terms of the storytelling and the characters that he wrote or helped develop that... It just hits me in that way. I don't know. I think I would beg to differ. Yeah, I think that's the apex of his career.
I think my trope.
We'll get there.
Starts to put some light on it.
Yeah. But yeah, have you guys ever seen any Yasujiro Ozu movies like Tokyo Story or Late Spring? So very famous old Japanese director. He does the same thing that Wes Anderson does, where everything is so meticulously framed that whenever I watch his movies, I think back to that director. So if you're a fan of Wes Anderson, I would check out Ozu and vice versa. Are we jumping into favorite? What are we doing? Favorite tropes? Is that what we're doing?
Scenes first.
Favorite scenes. Kyle, what's your third favorite Wes Anderson scene?
Oh, no break. Awesome. Would say my third favorite scene is probably the scene in Moonrise Kingdom. I'd like to call it the "What kind of bird are you?" And it is the encounter of Susie and Sam. That's his name. It's just when they first meet. He kind of dips out of their performance and he finds his way backstage and he sees her and she's doing her makeup and he sees this group of birds and he's like, "What kind of bird are you?" And they all answer and he's like, "No, what kind of bird are you?" And he like points at her.
That was really cool.
And it's like their first interaction and from the movie standpoint, it's like where they fall in love with each other. But it is the most, from the audience standpoint, it is one of the most awkward scenes because she's just like, it's in that typical Wes Anderson tone, "I'm a crow." Or I'm a raven? Shit, I don't know. But then they like have this really strange conversation of, "That's cool. How'd you hurt your hand?" I cut it on some glass. "Oh, how'd you do that?" "I let my anger get the best of me." And it was just like this weird like conversation.
It's almost adult.
Yeah, and then the only adult in the scene comes in and is just like, "You need to get out of here," and they're like, "Okay," and then he leaves. But it like that is the start of this really beautiful relationship of the entire movie, and it starts off in this really strange way, and I think it's incredible. And I know Nick has a ton to say about this because he's
dancing back from the bathroom. No, I was just going to say that I picked a different scene from.
That's good then, because then we won't overlap then.
Moonrise Kingdom, but this was very close to making my top three. I just the "No, what kind of a bird are you?
He's like points at her, and it's
such an amazing delivery. It's maybe my favorite line of any Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah, it's so awesome, and it goes so well with this movie because every line in this movie is just. An honorable mention is when Snoopy dies. Is that the name of the dog?
I can't remember, but that's so upsetting.
I almost cry every time I see that.
When he gets an arrow and they're like, was he a good dog? And he's like, "I don't know. But he didn't deserve to die." Yeah. And he every line is just delivered so like plainly and like so dull. But it's like, I don't know. This movie, yeah, I think Moonrise Kingdom might be my favorite Wes Anderson movie, but this scene is, yeah, when they meet and this incredible love between them forms is an incredible scene. So,
yeah.
What kind of bird are you?
I'm a sparrow. She's a dove.
No, I said, what kind of bird are you?
I'm a raven.
What about you, Jake? What's your number three?
So my number three scene is going to be the most generic, and then I'll be more specific as I move to two and one. But all of them include music as my favorite scenes. And I'd say my favorite, it's scene, trope, kind of mixed character, is going to be Sue Jorge from The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. And the way they did the Portuguese covers of David Bowie songs. Stuff. And they always came at really, you know, perfect times. And I think it's really interesting when movies figure out a way to work in sound and lyrics in a soundtrack. You know, in some movies it's, you know, you hear the song playing and then they pan into the scene and it someone pushes pause on the radio, and you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, it's part of the world that they're living in too. And that was what was really cool to me about Su Jorge, was that these guys were experiencing, you know, if you think of yourself that this, you know, journey existed and happened, you know, there's this guy and he would play David Bowie songs that they knew. They know David Bowie. And so then there's these weird Portuguese covers that happen. And I just think it was always at the perfect time. And, you know, David Bowie being like one of the most melancholy, kind of bittersweet singer-songwriters, it was just always pulled into the perfect time.
Su Jorge. Or you may know him as Knockout Ned from City of God. Great film.
Great film. Great. So yeah, I really liked the scenes that he really stole the show, in my opinion, in that movie.
Absolutely, yeah. He's by far my favorite. I don't like Life Aquatic that much.
See, I think you really need to rewatch it, and we'll get into that in a little bit.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but he is so goddamn good in that movie. And I haven't seen Life Aquatic in years, but I have listened to the soundtrack within the last 2 weeks. Because he's just so good in that movie.
You want a little water rinse in that beer?
My
I'd say you need to check out Bill Murray in that movie. I think he really kills it, and just Owen Wilson. I think it's just they have an emotional connection in that film that I think is
I've only seen it once, and it probably does deserve another viewing because all of his movies get better on second viewings, much like Arrested Development. My number three scene is a great use of Wes Anderson combining music with mood.
Are you
going to
film? Oh no! This
Royal Tenenbaums.
No, this is my number two.
Royal Tenenbaums. Needle in the Hay.
Needle in the Hay. Elliot Smith.
The Needle in the Hay scene. It's Luke Wilson's character, who we've already established as pretty depressed, and Needle in the Hay plays as he attempts to commit suicide. Basically,
yeah. And
it combines a lot of the Wes Anderson tropes of panning shots laterally as they rush into the hospital.
Yeah.
But it's such a good combination of song and scene and mood. And especially
Don't even know who Elliot Smith is. Yeah. It connects with them.
I was going to say, and especially knowing after the fact that Elliot Smith was a guy who I love Elliot Smith as a songwriter, ended up killing himself. And you can that kind of spirit is reflected in this scene with Luke Wilson's performance. It's just so jarring in what's otherwise a pretty lighthearted comedy, for the most part.
I don't know. It's kind of a dark comedy.
It's a very dark comedy, but
like you think about Margot, and it's like she's always introduced to like this is my adopted child, Margot Tenenbaum, and it's like this yeah, is a funny movie, and then you're like, this is kind of fucked up.
It is kind of fucked up, but it never gets as fucked up as a people dude committing suicide.
And someone trying to commit suicide by slitting their wrists in front of the mirror looking at themselves.
Yeah.
That was like the total thing for me is like the total, like his presence of mind as he was doing it.
Yeah, it's a very jarring
because
scene.
Because he found out his adopted sister was married.
No, not that she was married, that she was having an affair, but with somebody else.
Well,
not him.
Yeah.
It's just a beautifully shot scene, and it fits perfectly within the mood of what's otherwise, like you said, a dark comedy, but
yes,
the darkest moment in that movie, and I think probably the darkest moment in all of Wes Anderson's movies. It's just a great montage of...
I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to bring this up as a scene, but it comes back as my trope. Never mind.
You want to play some word games or do some experiments on me or anything?
No.
All right. Kyle, what's your number two favorite Wes Anderson thing?
My number two is really interesting because it's not actually a Wes Anderson scene, but it is the
Saturday Night Live bit.
Yeah. the Midnight Coterie of Sinister Intruders trailer.
So good.
Done by Saturday Night Live, which is arguably more Wes Anderson than
The word coterie is probably my favorite thing about that.
No, you may not.
No, you may not. Basically, this is just if Wes Anderson was to do a horror movie and Saturday Night Live killed it. They have
not even killed it. I mean, they killed him. I mean,
they killed him.
Killed it.
Picture of Edith Piaf.
In theaters this Halloween comes a new vision of horror like you've never seen before. From the twisted mind of Wes Anderson, it's The Midnight Coterie of Sinister Intruders, starring Owen Wilson as a man in danger.
Wow, what the heck? There's a bunch of crazy people standing in our yard. Hey, hon, I think we're about to get murdered.
And his terrified wife, Gwyneth Paltrow.
You don't say. Well, I'm
on my way. In the face of unspeakable evil.
Yeah, look at them all. There's a guy with a meat cleat and an old record player. One's carrying a falcon. They're twins in matching tracksuits. Hey, look at that. Why, that's Danny Glover.
Hello.
A tale of handmade horror.
Hey, they've sent us some kind of communique.
Dear homeowner, can we kill you? The murderers.
Dear murderers, no, you may not. The homeowner.
Ed Norton plays Owen Wilson, and it is hilarious. But basically, it's a spoof trailer done in the Wes Anderson style by the Saturday Night Live folk, and they just do it so well. It's like a 2.5 minute trailer. They have Jeff
Goldblum, right?
I don't think so. Alec Baldwin narrates it.
Yeah,
well, yeah. But I thought Goldblum's in it too.
I don't think
Goldblum's
so.
Actually in it.
Ed Norton plays Owen Wilson, and he doesn't a perfect job.
That's
of
just
him.
Weird.
There's somebody in our yard.
There's someone in our yard. There's like the handwritten letter. There's the gathering of the supplies. The picture of Edith Piaf,
and they're perfectly organized.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And then there's the tent panic room. let's go to the panic room, and then he does it Indian style in the tent. It's just incredible. There's the Danny Glover cameo or something. I don't even know what that is.
It was he's one of the cast members.
Oh,
but it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's supposed to be Danny Glover, but he's.
Oh, I know, but I mean, is Danny Glover like known for being in?
Yeah, he was in the Royal.
He's
Ten
in
of
Royal
Bombs.
Ton of Bums.
But is like, was it just a random?
No, he had a character for the last third of the movie.
Okay, I was just like, I just figured that because Wes Anderson always has like big cameos from people who have small parts, but yeah, the trailer is just incredible, and I think they nailed it. And yeah, I think that'd be my second sort of faux Wes Anderson scene. What about you, Jake?
My number two was the Richie Tenenbaum Needle in the Hay. So I'm going to send it to Nick.
Oh my God. I haven't even prepared. What is my number two?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. My number two is the stop motion scene of them skiing in Grand Budapest Hotel.
Nice.
And there's actually an interview with Wes Anderson where he talks about that scene and his explanation for
please
why.
Please tell me does he talk about like his other movies or anything?
No, no. Okay. So you would think that the main reason why he did it is, you know, he did Fantastic Mr. Fox and that's stop motion looking and he wanted to recreate that, but basically it was, how am I going to do a chase scene on skis? I don't. And in the interview, it's with like a Buffalo newspaper, he says, if I had Christopher Nolan money, maybe I could do it the way I wanted, but it would take like, it would take millions of dollars to do the scene the way I want, and it would take weeks to shoot it this way. So instead, I will just do it as stop motion because that way I can get exactly what I want. And it's such a good scene in the movie. And it kind of, I don't know if it was intentional based on that interview, but it does kind of reflect like there was an interview, it might have been with Slate, but they talk about, whoever it was talked about how that way of shooting it makes it seem a little bit more fairy tale-ish, which is kind of what the movie is.
Yeah.
It just really heightens that movie, and you could reshoot a chase scene on skis.
That's why,
many different ways, but I think doing it with stop motion is the best way.
That's why it kind of reminded me of the Fantastic Mr. Fox, because it's like got that, because Fantastic Mr. Fox was based on the Roald Dahl book. Yeah. And it kind of reminds me of that, like, sort of over the topness of it.
Hey guys, we're actually dividing this week's episode into two parts, so join us again in episode 96 next week when we're going to be talking a little bit more about some of our favorite Wes Anderson stuff. See you then.